tell the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, please be up, please stay up standing for the opening prayer and reconciliation statement. Almighty, mighty God, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing upon this council, direct and prosper its deliberations to the advancement of thy glory and the welfare of the people whom we serve. Amen. Reconciliation statement. Melbourne City Council acknowledges that the land it now occupies is a history that began with the Kulin Nation. With the indigenous occupants of Kulin Nation, council pays its respect to the Kulin Nation people, their elders and descendants, past and present. Thank you very much. Please be seated. I have a number two on the agenda. Apologies and leave of absence.
No, Mr. Mayor.
Item number three, changes to the order of business.
No, Mr. Mayor.
Item number four, deputations.
We have none this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Number five, declarations of any pecuniary interest, other interest or conflict of interest of any councillor. Adoption and confirmation of previous meetings.
Mr. Mayor, I move that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of Council held on the 4th of March 2014 be confirmed as the true and correct record.
Thank you, Councillor Ramsey. Do I have a seconder?
I'm happy to second that, Mr. Mayor.
Does any councillor have an objection? I declare it carried. Item number seven, correspondence inward.
Mr. Mayor, I present to Council this evening, received an item of correspondence addressed to the Mayor today. It's in relation to item 11.8 on this evening's agenda, the planning consideration for the former Diggers Rest Hotel. I just, with the Mayor's indulgence, I'd like to read that letter out.
Yes, please, Mr. Bean.
It's a letter from Maureen Agnew, who are representing the applicant. It's addressed to the Mayor and to the Chief Executive. We act for the company, the owner of the land, despite no notice from council to our client or its planning consultant who has been liaising with council about future development of the land. Our client understands its land is an item listed for consideration at council's ordinary meeting to be held tonight. It appears item 11.8 of the meeting will recommend that the council seek authorisation from the Minister for Planning to prepare and exhibit Planning Scheme Amendment C156, seeking to apply a heritage overlay on the land. We write expressing our client's disappointment in the lack of process associated with the preparation of the proposed amendment, the haste with which Council has acted, and request that Council delay consideration of the proposed amendment. Background, on 18 March 2014, we wrote to Council explaining that we were in receipt of the Council's letter dated 6 March 2014, advising that our client's application seeking consent to demolish the existing dwelling on the land had been suspended on the basis that an application had been made to the Minister for Planning seeking to place a heritage overlay on dwelling on the land. We understood that the Council had appointed a heritage consultant to assist Council and requesting further details of that consultant's involvement. We requested to provide with copies of all consultant advice received within 2 business days of Council receiving that advice, and we seek Council's response within 7 days from receipt of our letter. No response has been received to our letter despite our client's full cooperation in permitting Council's consultant to enter onto the land. Our client believes that it has been denied natural justice and had no opportunity to finalise its own investigation to the alleged heritage significance of the dwelling on the land. Despite this, Council is purporting to consider the proposed amendment, including the Council's heritage consultant's advice at tonight's ordinary meeting. To date, our client has not been one, provided with any response to our letter dated 18 March 2014, 2, provided with copies of any advice from the Council's heritage consultant, 3, notified of the proposed amendment by the Council, 4, notified of tonight's Council meeting, or 5, provided with any opportunity to meet with Council to discuss its proposed course of action. Request. Our client requests that the Council delay making a decision on the proposed amendment until our client has been provided with a reasonable opportunity to make its own investigations and discuss its position with Council. Given that no building permit for demolition can issue until the request for an interim heritage overlay is considered by the Minister for Planning, there is no urgency which can justify Council's actions. Similarly, delay to allow our client to properly consider the situation and meet with Council is appropriate and justified. Council has acted in such haste that we believe its actions would be open to challenge, and should Council proceed to consider the item tonight, our client reserves its right to look back to Council for all costs and damages incurred by it in defending Council's actions. Given our client's intended redevelopment of the land, unnecessary delay to the project could result in significant loss. We would appreciate if this letter could be brought to the urgent attention of the councillors prior to tonight's meeting. Please contact us to arrange a time to meet with you to discuss our client's concerns. Yours faithfully, Maureen Agnew. I have one point, Mr Mayor. Mr Heaney, to my left, has pointed out to me that I quoted as the Diggers Rest House. It should be the Diggers Rest former hotel.
No, otherwise.
Oh, was it? Sorry. Okay. So with that, Mr Mayor, I would just require a motion from the Council to receive the inwards correspondence.
Thank you, Mr Bean. Do you have a Councillor to put forward a motion to accept the inwards correspondence?
I'll move a motion to accept, but can I just seek clarification of the clarification? Is it the house or is it the hotel?
Yes, it's the house with the turret.
Thank you.
Do you have a Councillor to second the motion?
Happy to second the motion to accept the letter.
Thank you, Councillor Medley. Does any councillor oppose the motion? I declare the motion carried. Item number 8, petitions and joint letters.
None.
Item number 9, resumption of debate or other business carried over from a previous meeting.
No, Mr. Mayor.
Item number 10, public question time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a number of public questions for consideration this evening. First question is from Mr. John Southall, who's in the gallery. And he asks, what is happening with Scott Street, Melton? Residents want to know if any works are going on and what may be the completion date. Mr. Luke Shannon, General Manager of Planning and Development, will respond.
Thank you, Mr. Southall, for your inquiry. As you'll recall, Council has allocated $500,000 in this financial year to undertake significant improvements at the Scott Street shopping precinct. The works that will occur there include widening the existing footpath, increasing the number of car parking spaces at the frontage of the shops, installing speed humps adjacent to the shops to slow traffic, undertaking significant landscape works adjacent to the shops and also within the park adjacent, installing playground equipment within the park and generally upgrading the park to effectively lift that whole area. I'm pleased to advise that the works program have been split into two parts. The main concreting works, which will include the widening of the footpath adjacent to the shops, will commence next week. And we will be consulting with the traders during the course of this week to make sure they're aware of that, and that the contractor is also acutely aware that their works need to be programmed so as not to cause any undue concerns to the shop owners. In terms of landscaping of the park, those works are currently out to tender and we expect the works to be awarded and completed by the end of June this year. Thank you.
The second question this evening has been submitted by Michelle Mendez, and Ms. Mendez is in the gallery. Her first question is, what are Council doing to lobby VicRoads in regards to the remainder of the Melton Highway duplication not taking place for an estimated 15 years when you have Plumpton and Atherston growing rapidly? Again, Mr. Shannon will respond.
Thank you, Ms. Mendez, for your question. You might recall that Council has actually formed an advisory committee to provide advice and recommendations in terms of how we will continue to advocate to VicRoads for them to plan and to duplicate the Melton Highway. Unfortunately, at this point in time, VicRoads have not committed to when those works might occur, but clearly as Melton, the city of Melton and the Melton Township in particular continues to grow, there'll be increasing pressure on the Melton Highway, so Council has and will continue to advocate very strongly for those works to be firstly planned and then committed to by VicRoads. Thank you.
Further question from Ms. Mendez, and this one, reads, can Council please provide data from the 2009 traffic study which formed the basis for the Western Highway Anthony's Cutting realignment project? I also require all road usage data for Bullmans Road, along High Street to Coburn's Road over the last 10 years, and data on road usage on Coburn's Road from the highway entrance to High Street, along with data from Bullmans Road. Again, Mr. Shannon, to respond.
Thank you for the second question. The Anthony's Cutting project was one obviously undertaken by Vic Roads, using largely state government funding, but also some federal government funding. Clearly, Vic Roads undertook analysis prior to that work occurring, which included traffic assessments regarding existing traffic levels and future traffic levels. I'm happy to request Vic Roads to provide you directly a copy of their assessment. In terms of the traffic volumes on Bullmans, High Street and Coburn's Road, Council does have historical data and current data regarding traffic volumes along those lengths of road, and we'd be more than happy to provide you with the relevant details. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Andrula Tuvana, who's in the gallery. The question reads, development lands and UGB lands have 15.1% and 17.6% of owners that are pensioners. These are the highest proportions of pensioners of any rating category. Pensioners in these categories are paying an average of between $3,675 to $6,584 per annum in council rates. This represents up to 50% of their annual income from the pension. Why do councillors persistently insist on placing most financial burden on these groups of pensioners? Do Melton councillors consider paying 50% of your annual income and on unlawful council rates to be appropriate or acceptable? Mr. Peter Bean, General Manager of Corporate Services, will respond.
Thanks for that, Mr. Varner. The response I prepared sets it out in sort of two parts, on a percentage basis and on a raw data basis. But the highest proportion of pensioners in any land category is in actually the retirement village category, which has over 83% of the ratepayers being pensioners in that category. That equates to 468 pensioners in total. However, the general rates category has the highest number of pensioners, being 5,822 pensioners, and this represents 89% of the total number of pensioners we have within the municipality. The UGB area has only 68 pensioners contained within it, and the development land group has 14 pensioners within it, but I'd just like to highlight that there's no sort of rating category known as development land or UGB land in the current year, but it was relevant to highlight those two for the purpose of your question. The rates are based, as many would know, on the valuation of the land, and the legislation only allows for rating differentiation based on land use and not on a person's designation in life, such as being a pensioner. There is a state government rebate of $189 currently to assist with this, and council also contributes to the tune of $45 currently. If a person has difficulty in their capacity to pay the council rate, such as you have illustrated in your question, council has a policy to assist ratepayers in ensuring that they have every opportunity to pay their rates, either through a repayment plan or by deferring rates. Whilst I can't speak for the individual councillors, I'm sure they will be very open to discussing the circumstances of a resident's difficulties in paying their rates if it was in fact 50% of their annual income. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
The next question is also from...
Mr. Mayor? Sorry, what was that in the general rates category?
Yes, you said
89%.
Can you please clarify where you came from that percentage?
Because in
your figures, 5,000 odd pensioners with 40,000 property.
Yeah, but they're not all
pensioners. 5 out of 40,000 does not equate to 83% or whatever your percentage was.
That's 89% of the total pensioners that we have in the municipality. Now, your question, as we interpret it, says that they have 15.1% and 76% of owners are pensioners.
Correct. From your figure on your table.
Right.
So you've obviously misinterpreted the question.
All right, well, I'll take that on notice and I'll provide it in the written response to you. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not capable of being able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Varner. We'll move on, please. Mr. Torrey.
Second question from Mr. Varner is, can you provide details of who the 10 members representing various different rating categories were and what sector each one of these 10 members represented? If these supposed members representing various different rating categories were true community representatives and council has faith in their knowledge and capabilities to represent their respective category, why does council need to put the recommendations made by the group out to public comment before the recommendation is adopted by councillors? Will these public comments be made publicly available for all to see? Bracket, understandably, with identifying information removed, close bracket, so that the public can be assured that the councillors do not use the public comment as a scapegoat to not accept the rating strategy group recommendations. Again, Mr. Peter Bean, General Manager, Corporate Services, will respond.
The details you requested, specifically the names and the rating category of the people contained within the group or the members of the rating strategy reference group, are listed on page 9 of the appendix to the council report 1111, and these will be provided to you in the written response. The nominations for the reference group were publicly called from residents in the municipality. So the only criteria for a person to participate in the advisory group was that they be a ratepayer. There was no requirement that they have any level of expertise or qualifications, but the fact that they are ratepayers certainly defines that they would have the community interest as a key objective in providing a recommendation for council's consideration. A rating strategy is a complex issue, and council believe it is important to gain feedback from the wider community on the recommendations from the advisory group to assist it in formulating its position as part of the budget process. Two previous public rating strategy reviews conducted in 2004 and 2007 generated very little community input, but it assisted in formulating the final decision in adopting a model. Depending on how many responses are received, we'll determine whether they are all collated into one document with all the responses contained within it, or if there are only a few individual submissions, they will be attached to the back of the report with all the relevant personal details removed. Thank you.
The next question is from Suzanne Volpe, or Volpe. Is Ms. Volpe present? Okay. And it reads, I would like to submit objections from my local neighbourhood in person at the council meeting. I would also like to ask why local residents were not informed about the submission made by Borrell. So I refer this to Luke Shannon in respect of the second part.
Thank you for your question. In terms of the planning permit application, it was, in fact, advertised. I appreciate there is some dispute about how widely it has been advertised. However, council has met its obligations in terms of how widely it has been advertised. You'll be aware that we've received a significant number of objections at this present time in the order of 3,800 objections, and we would certainly invite residents who have concerns to lodge an objection if they haven't already done so, or a submission. And we will consider those up to the time council makes a decision on the application.
In respect of the first section, I'm presuming you just want to table them here at the meeting. Is that correct?
Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, sorry, point just of clarification. Do we need to have a motion to accept that?
I was just clarifying that myself.
Council can resolve that if they wish, but their objections that are submitted to a planning process and will be considered as part of that. So it's not absolutely necessary, but it's the discretion of council if you wish to go down that
path. I think we will. Can I have a councillor to move that we accept these?
I'm happy to move that, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Medlick. Do you have a councillor to second?
I'd like to second that.
Thank you, Councillor Dunn. Does any councillor oppose? I declare the motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next question this evening is from Melanie Michelli, okay, who's in the gallery. The question reads, the Municipal Public Health and Wellbeing Plan released by the City of Melton just last year shows a clear indication that there is growing community awareness and shared interest in promoting good health and wellbeing across the municipality. An example of this is the recent investment in new equipment and a revamp of the facilities at Melton Waves Leisure Centre. However, it was concerning to note that the Leisure Centre does not have a defibrillator or well-stocked first aid kit. While it is true that sudden cardiac arrest can happen to anyone at any time, intense and vigorous exercise can significantly increase that risk, and this is especially true of our senior community members. Defibrillation needs to be performed on a victim of SCA within 3 to 5 minutes, or the victim has only a 2 to 5% chance of surviving the attack, with the average ambulance response time anywhere from 10 minutes up to 14 minutes. Having a defibrillator on hand can save a life. In light of these facts, can Council please provide a reason as to why a defibrillator was not considered necessary resource for the Leisure Centre, and if this decision can be reassessed? Murray Heaney, General Manager, Community Services, will respond.
Thank you, Melanie, for your question, and it's a fair question. Council at the moment has purchased 8 of these defibrillators on site. We are in current discussions with Belgravia Leisure. You're absolutely correct. At this stage, there is not one at the Aquatic Centre, but I think you'll find in the very near future that will be a purchase that Belgravia has committed to do. And in regards to the first aid kits, we're in common contact with our provider, Belgravia Leisure, under the contract, and Belgravia Leisure has advised us that they do actually check the first aid kits once a week as a process. So I'll take on board your 2 questions and we'll respond accordingly to you. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Erwin Bormans. Mr. Bormans is in the gallery. Question reads, I am already 4.5 years a hillside resident and small business owner in the city of Melton, assisting in various roles, district energy and waste to energy projects in Australia and Asia. I received encouraging support from the previous mayor, Justin Mamarella. I'm very often on stage at various big exposure events. Since a few months, we've confronted in our city with the Stop the Tip protests about the redevelopment in Melbourne's Western Fringe Growth Corridor of Burrell's Quarry into a rubbish dump. I'd like to request the mayor and council to reject this Burrell's requested permit to operate a tip there, as there are nowadays much smarter solutions available to transfer waste into energy made with off-the-shelf products, future-proofing our great city. I'm more than happy to explain more. Thank you very much. Luke Shannon, General Manager of Planning and Development, will respond.
Thank you, Erwin, for your question. As I stated earlier, Council has obviously received a lot of public interest in the landfill proposal, and it's intended that a report will be provided to Council at its 27th of May Council meeting on this issue. I'll treat your question effectively as a submission to the application. Council is aware that there are advancing technologies in terms of how to deal with waste. We must consider this application on its merits, and we'll have regard to the provisions of the planning scheme, relevant policy, as well as all the objections received, and we'll certainly have regard to the issues that you raise, and I'd be happy to talk to you either tonight or subsequently about some of the particular matters you've raised. Thank you.
Next question is from Alan Fairweather. Mr. Fairweather is in the gallery. His question reads, would one of the councillors or planning department officers please explain to me why, with the proposed housing diversity strategy and the proposed multi-lot subdivision in Outlook Ride, which will increase the pressure on Kurrenjang Ranch Estate to subdivide, why I should keep using money to maintain my house and garden when, due to the proposed changes, it could be bulldozed and chopped up for another multi-lot subdivision that, like Atherston, have nowhere for children to play in their own backyard. I would be better off using the maintenance money each year for a holiday and let the house and garden go to rack and ruin, because the only thing of value is the land, and as the property devalues, my rate should also diminish, giving me more money for my holiday. I will refer this question to Mr. Luke Shannon to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Fairweather, for your question. Obviously, you're aware that at the last council meeting, council had an application that it considered for development in the Outlook Ride area that was deferred for a period of up to 3 months. That matter will obviously come back to council for further consideration upon discussions with the applicant and residents in that area. Council is aware that applications such as that can cause distress for local residents who are obviously enjoying a lifestyle where they're on larger allotments within the Melton Township. It's certainly not our intention to cause undue distress. However, we have to consider an application that we receive on its merits, having regard to all of the issues. In terms of property maintenance, clearly there's most residents in that vicinity demonstrate enormous pride in their properties, and that's pleasing. We certainly hope that will continue. Ultimately, it's a decision for individual landholders whether they continue to maintain their properties in a high standard or not, and indeed whether they continue to reside there or choose to reside somewhere else into the future, but that's clearly a decision for each individual landholder. Thank you.
Next question, Mr. Mayor, is from Andreas Antonio, who's in the gallery. The question reads, in the 2008 National Best Practice Management Manual -serrated Tussock, it states that Melton Council spends approximately $2 million on rebates each year to support EEP, but estimates the scheme has stimulated approximately $2.5 million per year of landholder investments. Can you please explain how Council has previously made the bold accusations that the EEP costs them money, when in actual fact, by their own admission, it earns them $500,000 each year in landholder investments? Mr. Luke Shannon will respond.
Thank you, Mr. Antonio, for your question. Council, as you know, does invest around about $2 million per year into the Environmental Enhancement Program to all eligible rural landholders. The 2008 Best Practice Management Manual that you refer to provided a case study of Melton's policy, obviously dating back 6 years now. The case study referred to the fact that as a result of Council's program, landholders reinvest approximately $2.5 million into their property. So it's not a windfall for Council, it's actually giving the ability to the owners to invest money into their properties to improve them, which in turn leads to improvements within the local economy. Thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Mario Kasia, and Mr. Kasia's in the gallery. Mr. Kasia's question reads, my question is with all respect to creating quality people, hope, reward and opportunities. As I bumped into a council officer at the community event, I relate to my last question at the last council meeting, where the answer to my question that I raised was, it's bad to put residential parks over good land development like 402 Clarks Road. For us to sell half in our subdivision, which will raise $16 million, money, and keeping half the land to build housing for rent affordability to help first home owners and to help their children from becoming disadvantaged. Some 200 townhouses with a school, etc., which the council officer admitted the private enterprise can build much cheaper than government, about one third of the cost, but affordability raising and service enterprise, 402 Clark Road, gross land economic development like ours, use of that land can build and run such a service to deliver cheaper rent, etc. To get to the nub of it, Mr. Kasia asks, Please, Mr. Luke Shannon, would you have a look at our latest submission, which copy is enclosed with the question, to the MPA, Metropolitan Planning Authority, and council officers. They have a copy of our proposed land use, PSP 1080, thanking you. So I'll refer that to Mr. Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. Kasha. In short, yes, we will consider your submission. I have a copy, and we will provide a copy of that to the Metropolitan Planning Authority as well. They're obviously responsible for preparing the Coleroy Precinct Structure Plan, which includes your property in Clark Road, and we're happy to discuss those particular issues with them. Thank you.
Mr. Kasha. Thank you, Mr. Kasha. We'll move on now. Thank you.
Next question, Mr. Mayor, is from David O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor's in the gallery. He asks, I make reference to the attached public question time response with respect to the Neighbourhood House Strategic Framework Report, which is a response to an earlier question from Mr. O'Connor. In accordance with the response, it was anticipated that a draft report would be available for community feedback from July 2013. Would Council advise the current status of the draft report? And Mr. Murray Heaney, General Manager Community Services, will respond.
Thanks, David, for your question. It was anticipated, and you're correct that it was, that it would be available post July 2013. At the same time, Council has taken a view to undertake a review of its current neighbourhood host programs right across the city, but with an intent to create more activity in all the community facilities that Council invests in. So I think you'll see a dramatic change in the neighbourhood house / community spaces across the city in a very short while, and we're in the midst of doing that as we speak. Once we get that in place, there'll be further engagement with our community and communities direct within those community facilities or neighbourhood house catchments, if you like, to have further conversations about what specifically is required to in those catchments for those residents. Thank you very much.
The next question, which is also from Mr. O'Connor, states, some residents living in the township of Diggers Rest are concerned about a possible municipal boundary realignment to include the Diggers Rest Township as part of the Sunbury out of Hume separation. Does Melton City Council intend to provide feedback to the consultation process in favour of retaining the township of Diggers Rest within the Melton municipality? So in response to that, Mr. O'Connor, I do advise that we will be making a very brief submission to the panel. The review panel are taking submissions up until Friday the 11th of April. The terms of reference, when you read them, don't really include any proposition that anything outside the current boundary of Hume will be considered. And there's no reference anywhere to annexation of any other municipal areas beside the Sunbury area. Having said that, the submission that council will be making will be along the lines that if at any point there is any consideration that it might be appropriate to annex any portion of the City of Melton to either the remnant Hume City or the newly created Sunbury Shire, that a plebiscite similar to that conducted previously in the Sunbury and Hume areas should be undertaken to clearly engage the community in what the proposal is and to have their say. So whilst that's not directly saying, you know, we would oppose, which no doubt we would, but what it's saying is that the community must be consulted if that is at any stage considered. Next question is from Chris Tuvana, who's in the gallery. Question reads, there is a statement in the 2008 National Best Practice Management Manual, serrated tussock, that says that Melton Council will seek extra funding to enable sensitive weed control on sites holding high biodiversity values. Can you please explain what funding, bracket and how much, close bracket, you receive for weed control and how much extra funding was received and whether this extra funding was proportionately distributed to landowners whose lands have been arbitrarily time-stamped to be able to sustain the growth of native vegetation or whose lands have been identified as significant habitats for growling grass frogs, golden sun moss and striped legless lizards? Again, Mr. Luke Shannon, General Manager of Planning and Development, will respond.
Thank you, Mr. Tuvana, for your question. Subsequent to the issue of the guideline or the manual in 2008, Council did in fact receive funding effectively through the Port Phillip Catchment Management Authority, and that was through a program known as Caring for Country, which was federal government money, which was to be expended in areas particularly focusing on native grasslands and where issues of weeds intersected with significant native grasslands. I don't have the particulars of the funding stream available at the moment, but I'm happy to provide the details of that in writing to you.
Next question, also from Mr. Tuvana. Considering recommendations 2 and 3 made in agenda item 11.11 of tonight's council meeting agenda, has it always been an option that council had to put a rating strategy recommendation out for public comment before setting the draft budget? Was this always an option available in addition to the 223 committee submission objection process? If this option has always been available to council, why has it never been exercised previously, especially in the 2010 year, when UGB/DL council rates were increased by up to 400%? Mr. Peter Bean will respond.
Thanks, Mr. Tuvana. Council conducted a full rating strategy review in 2004 and 2007. The process in 2004 was similar to the current one undertaken, with an advisory committee to council being appointed. A draft strategy was developed and put out for public consultation. Feedback received from that consultation process assisted council in adopting the rates model that was used in that year's particular budget. In 2007, council again decided to facilitate the process, but this time using a consultant, and did not use an advisory committee in any way to develop the rating strategy. Part of the consultant's brief was to facilitate community consultation, and it's fair to say that the level of community interest in the process at that time was poor. Again, the feedback received, although it was of a low nature, from the engagement process was significant in the consideration of developing a rating strategy for the budget in that year, and Council struck the strategy and implemented the budget that year based on both the recommendations from the consultant and the community consultation. Since that time, Council have chosen to review its differential rating structure as part of the budget process and not taken the option that you've sought clarification on as one that is being available, but Council did choose to review its rating structure as part of its budget process and not separately, and consider any submissions as part of a differential rating structure as part of the 223 budget process. The change for the process in this year is based on the Auditor-General's findings on differential rating that was released in 2013, which strongly recommended the Council should undertake a rating strategy review such as the one undertaken and as such, many Victorian councils have undertaken the same process that this council has. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Next question is...
Yes, you can have a clarification.
Well, the 300 submissions received by council were considered by council as part of that process, the budget process. It wasn't a separate process as what we're facilitating here.
The next question is from Mr. Nathan Miles. Mr. Miles is in the gallery. His question is, can council please confirm, does Boral pay the Melton City Council a royalty or any other payment or sum of money for disposal of rubbish within the landfill site in Ravenhall? If so, exactly how much is the royalty or sum of money? And can council provide this figure both tonight and in writing? I refer the matter to Luke Shannon for response.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Whilst obviously Boral is a ratepayer within the municipality, we in fact receive no royalties from any of their operations at their site. Thank you.
Next question is from Nathan Miles again. He refers to item 11.11, recommendations from Rating Strategy Group. Does council believe it is fair and equitable or ethical, as I do not, to increase the rates of retirement village residents, the majority of who are pensioners, and at the same time decrease commercial rates for entities such as Coles, Aldi and Woolworths? Mr. Peter Bean will respond.
Nathan, Council's yet to formalise, I suppose, its opinion on the way the recommendations of the Rating Strategy Review have come out. I suppose to some degree I felt a lot of your position here is a statement or perhaps your opinion. I'm happy to take it on board as being a submission, or if you wish to submit a more detailed submission, I'm more than happy to do that, and we'll attach that to the report as I outlined in a previous question in regard to this matter. Thank you.
And that finalises public question time, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Tory. Item number 11, presentation of staff reports. 11.1.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that the recommendations be accepted as officer's recommendation for items number 1.1, 1.2, 11.1, 11.2, 11.3, 11.4 and 11.5.
Thanks, Luke Housel. Do you have a councillor to second the motion?
I'd like to second that, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Ramsey. Does any councillor oppose the motion? I declare the motion carried. Agenda item 11.6, Heritage Advisory Committee meeting, I believe, Mr. Baggio.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Heritage Advisory Committee provides advice to council on the management and conservation of heritage within the City of Melton. The committee, for example, makes recommendations to council for applications to the Heritage Assistance Fund and advocates on behalf of the community on heritage matters. At its meeting on the 28th of February, the committee considered the free nominations that were received for the City of Melton Heritage Award 2014. The committee voted in support of a shared award between Edna Barry and Wendy Barry. Edna and Wendy were nominated for their contribution to the conservation and promotion of heritage in Melton. The committee also discussed events and further advertising opportunities for the upcoming Heritage Week, and also discussed the creation of a register of significant historical themes or names that could be used as street names within the municipality in future. There are actually no recommendations to council arising from the meeting, and all actions are for the committee members. So it's therefore recommended, Mr. Mayor, that council notes the minutes of the Heritage Advisory Committee meeting held on the 28th of February 2014. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baggio. Does any councillor require any further clarification? Do you have a councillor to move the motion?
I'd like to move the motion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Dunn. Do you have a councillor to second the motion?
Can I second the motion, Mr. Mayor, and congratulate the two recipients?
Thank you, Councillor Ramsey. Does any councillor oppose the motion? I declare the motion carried. Item 11.7, City of Melton Retail Activity Centre Strategy. Mr. Baggio.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Back in 2012, as part of its comprehensive review of the council's planning scheme, the council identified that it needed to prepare a number of significant planning strategies to inform and underpin the rewriting of the planning controls and the planning scheme. One of the strategies that was identified was the preparation of a retail and activity centre strategy, which is the subject of this council report. So the strategy has now been completed and is attached to the report together with the accompanying background and consultation reports. The strategy, I believe, provides a policy framework to support the long-term integrated land use planning and delivery of a hierarchy of retail and activity centres across the municipality. The strategy also provides direction for council in terms of its decision-making in relation to retail and commercial uses. The strategy is underpinned by strong economic planning and urban design analysis, and I think provides a clear framework to guide the future development of activity centres throughout the city. An extensive consultation process was undertaken as part of the development of the strategy, which included an interactive online survey, a direct notification to all traders, a workshop with owners of existing retail centres and land identified for future activity centres, and also individual meetings with interested stakeholders. A number of submissions were received, including a submission from the Department of Transport, Planning and Local Infrastructure, and also the Metropolitan Planning Authority, who were generally supportive of the strategy. A further 9 submissions were received as part of the consultation process. One of the submissions provided support for the strategy and raised no issues. The remaining 8 submissions were generally supportive of the strategy, but raised a number of issues to be considered in the finalisation of the document. So on that basis, Mr. Mayor, it's recommended that Council effectively adopt the strategy as per the recommendation in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baggio. Does any Councillor require further clarification? Do I have a Councillor to move the motion?
I'll move the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Borg. Does any Councillor wish to second the motion?
I'll second the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cugliari. Does any Councillor oppose the motion? I declare the motion carried. Agenda item 11.8, Melton Planning Scheme Amendment C156. Mr. Badger, you're having a busy night.
Mr. Mayor, the site in this case is located at numbers 13 to 15 Diggers Rest Kamida Road in Diggers Rest and has an area of about 43.5 hectares in total. The site contains an existing dwelling known as Affinry, in addition to some outbuildings and some mature trees in the northern part of the site, while the southern part of the site is largely vacant. The site is located within a residential one zone under the council's planning scheme and is also significantly affected by the Melbourne Airport Environs overlay. At this time, the existing dwelling is not actually included in the heritage overlay and is therefore not protected under the council's planning scheme. It is, however, identified as what's known as a conservation desirable site in the council's heritage study. The actual citation for the property in the heritage study identifies the house Affinry as a circa 1920s weatherboard house, with mostly weatherboard tower follies added by local industrialist A.E. Tame post-1937. At the time of the heritage study being prepared, a detailed assessment of the property could not be done owing to the owner at the time not allowing access to the property. Given this inability to carry out that detailed assessment of the property could not be included in the heritage overlay at that time. Council has more recently received a request to demolish the dwelling under Section 29A of the Building Act. And as part of the assessment of this request, council officers have recently been given access to the property and deemed the property worthy of further investigation for placement in the heritage overlay. The actual demolition request has been suspended pending further investigations into the historic significance of the site. A heritage consulting acting on behalf of council has recently completed a detailed heritage assessment of the property, which is actually appended to the council report. So the assessment's been completed for the site and has identified the site or the buildings as having local significance values relating to its architectural, historical and social significance. The heritage consultant has advised that the house is in fair condition but is still worthy of retention. Some portions of the external cladding may require replacement, and those items of architectural significance that remain within the dwelling are considered to be in good or excellent condition. It's therefore recommended by the consultant that the dwelling and mature trees, particularly around the dwelling, be included in the heritage overlay, which requires an amendment to the planning scheme. It should also be noted by council that the land is currently affected by a Section 173 agreement, which in effect requires that any new lots created must have an area of at least 2,000 square metres. The landowners have for some time been discussing with council officers a proposal to subdivide the land into residential lots, and the plan, the concept plan, shows a future access road traversing the area which is occupied by the existing dwelling. However, it should be noted that a planning application for the proposal has yet to be lodged with council. As indicated previously in the meeting, late this afternoon a letter was received from the landowner's solicitors indicating that they believe their client has been denied natural justice and has not been given an opportunity to finalise its own investigations into the heritage significance of the building. And they actually requested council defer consideration of the report pending their own investigations and also potentially a meeting with councillors. I suppose in responding to this, council should note that the recommendation in the report only seeks to initiate the amendment process, so the recommendation is for council to approach the minister seeking authorisation of the amendment, and in the event that the minister approves authorisation, then council would need to exhibit the amendment and give the landowner and other affected parties an opportunity to make a submission to the amendment, which potentially could end up at an independent panel for consideration. And further, given that council has sought suspension of the application for demolition, there are statutory obligations and expectations that the subsequent amendment process will be dealt with minimal delays. So it's therefore recommended, Mr. Mayor, that as per the recommendation in the report, that council in effect initiate the amendment process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baggio. Does any councillor require further clarification? Councillor Ramsey.
Just one, Mr. Baggio, if I may, through you, Mr. Mayor. The heritage strategy that was done 6 to 7 years ago, I'm of the understanding that if it was conservation desirable, why wasn't it considered at that point in time? What prohibited council from accepting the heritage overlay then?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it's my understanding, as I indicated previously, as in the report, that the council officers and their consultants were denied access to the property, and on that basis weren't able to actually conduct a detailed assessment of the property.
Mm. Through you, Mr. Mayor, if I may. I love the words natural justice when we've been denied access onto the property, so for heritage purposes, they must have understood that there was something of value there. But they initiated their own this timeline by actually submitting the demolition order or the application to demolish. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. So an application was made for demolition of the dwelling under the relevant section of the Building Act. Mm-hmm. The application was referred to council for its consideration. Council has a fairly limited timeline in which to request or to make a decision as to whether the building is of heritage significance such that interim protection be sought, 15 days from actually receiving the application, which is what the council did. Mm-hmm. And then subsequent to that, council has a further 4 weeks to carry out a detailed assessment, which is what it's done.
And as you've outlined, Mr. Baggio, they have clear ability through the process to get their own adjudication done and their own heritage study done, and that whilst it's at the minister and all that, they can go through that process and submit.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's correct. What's been recommended to council tonight is really just the first step of the amendment process, which is to seek authorisation from the Minister for Planning to prepare an amendment to the planning scheme. If the minister grants that, then the next step in the process is for council to prepare the amendment documentation and exhibit the amendment and invite, if you like, submissions to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Baggio. Do I have a councillor to move the motion?
I'd like to move the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Carley, thank you. Do I have a councillor to second the motion?
I'd like to second the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Curley. Does any councillor oppose the motion?